The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Beautiful, beautiful day here at Edstone. New varieties of birds coming into the feeder. I haven't had a whole lot of time to do some research on these new varieties, but we have promised pictures, even video. The weather's getting warmer. We'll have that in one of our programs coming up for you that... Watch the live stream on YouTube. Speaking of the live stream, we have another special Saturday edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show scheduled for this Saturday, same time as last Saturday, 2 p.m. in the afternoon here in the UK, 9 a.m. Saturday morning in Oklahoma. And this time, our featured speaker will be my father, Gerald Flurry, speaking to you live from Edmond, from beautiful Armstrong Auditorium. We've got the details still to sort out on that. It's going to be on all of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show venues, the YouTube stream, KPCG, so nothing changes. If you're familiar with seeing this program or listening to this program, just do it as you normally would. But we may have some sort of introduction from here, and then we'll switch it over to the other side of the pond for my father's live presentation. This is open for everyone. Live presentation this Saturday morning, if you're in the United States, or here in the European area, Saturday afternoon. So that's some exciting news indeed. Well, India has 1.3 billion. I knew it was a lot of people. It's not quite 3.3 billion, but still 1.3 billion people. Over a billion people in India. 10 of them have died from the Wuhan flu. So what should Prime Minister Modi do? Shall we answer together? Lock it down. Lock down the entire nation. Lock it all down. Confine everyone in India to their houses. They're all under house arrest. The BBC says India's Prime Minister Modi has imposed a nationwide. This goes beyond what even China did. China locked down Wuhan. This is like a nationwide lockdown in China. 1.3 billion people. India's Prime Minister Modi has imposed a nationwide lockdown in an attempt to slow the spread of the coronavirus. The restrictions will be enforced for 21 days. So it's like the announcement here the other night with Britain. We'll check back on this. We'll review it in 3 weeks, 21 days. We're not reviewing it on a day-by-day basis. This is a three-week lockdown. Says there will be a total ban on venturing out of your homes, Mr. Modi said in a televised address. Told the whole nation this yesterday. A total ban on venturing out of your homes. He appealed for people not to panic. Well, why on earth would they panic? The 1.3 billion people in India that have been told to not venture out of their homes. BBC says here, correspondents say it is not clear how or even if people will now be allowed out to buy food and other essentials. They don't even know when they can go shopping. They don't even know when they can go to the supermarket. But this is now what we're supposed to do. Remember the governor's statement, if everything we do saves one life, I'll be happy. And surely that must go down as perhaps the most preposterous, irrational statement made by any leader through the duration of this crisis. A complete and total lockdown. Whether it's 1.3 billion in India, tens of millions in New York, a lot of human beings, a lot of world leaders, a lot of governors, presidents, prime ministers, they're clamping down on the entirety of society. There's a proverb that says, he that trusts in his own heart is a fool. And the prophet Isaiah says that, woe unto you if you call evil good and good evil. If you put darkness for light and light for darkness, woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes. Lots of wise sounding statements. Well, we're just doing it for the people. We're just trying to protect the people. And meanwhile, the cure, as we've said, the cure is causing a lot more trouble and problems and sickness than the disease itself. You'll recall on Sunday night, Donald Trump, President Trump, tweeted out that he's not going to let the cure be worse than the problem. He reiterated that yesterday in his daily briefing. And then, the day before yesterday. And then yesterday in his Fox interview, he seemed like he was, well, it was almost like he was, the old Donald Trump was back, the one from 2-3 weeks ago. The one that was excitedly talking about jobs and the economy and putting Americans to work. And in the middle of this fascinating town hall, I guess it's a virtual town hall, so everyone has to keep their social distance. You had all these chairs in the Rose Garden, I guess, spread out, the Fox News host asking questions to the president, the vice president, his medical advisors there. And in the midst of this, the Fox host is kind of inquiring about how was this decision made? How did we come to this point, the lockdown? What was it that generated this kind of action? It's unprecedented. It's never happened before. And the president said this, clip one.
And now a few people walk into the Oval Office, say, sir, we have to close up the country.
And
I said, what are you talking about?
Mr. President.
Like, if I would have not done it, we would have been unbelievably criticized for not doing it. But it's never been done before. Yep. Somehow the word got out that this is the thing we're supposed to be doing.
That's President Trump yesterday. Somehow, he said, he doesn't even know all that's going on here in the spiritual sphere. And we're trying, as I said last Saturday, we're trying to put together some dates. It is going to be fascinating to study this after this dies out. And we're able to then look back and people are able to analyze the data. Once it's finally said and done, compare it to the swine flu, compare it to the Spanish flu, compare it to the ordinary flu. That's coming. Plus, we're going to begin to see who was behind all of this. Because we know Satan's the god of this world. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. We know that. We know that the whole world is deceived. And we also know that Satan has human instruments that he works through. But what a wave of deception. 1.3 billion people now. Add India to the list. You can add India to the madness. Here it's looking like President Trump finally is preparing to say enough. Enough with this. They came into my office, a few of them. I assume he means the medical experts. And they said, we've got to close up the country. We've got to shut down the country. And he indicated there that, well, if he would have gone against that, look at how much criticism would have come upon the United States and upon the president's administration. So as I've been covering, he did change his tune just a little bit 2-3 weeks ago. He handed the reins of government over to the medical profession. We've been noting that healing booklet quote from Mr. Armstrong, the medical profession has become so powerful that an MD could quarantine even the president of the United States and enforce his virtual imprisonment in the White House. In such an instance, the medical profession has even more power than the president of the United States. Somehow, the word got out that this is the thing we're supposed to do. 1.3 billion people, 10 deaths in India, and Prime Minister Modi, well, this is what we're supposed to do. This is just what we're supposed to do now. Everyone's doing it. Every nation's doing it. A complete and total lockdown. There's 3 deaths in Israel. Israel's a much smaller state, 8 million people. The third death was a 91-year-old man. 91. But he gets a touch of corona right at the end. And of course, that's the cause. So what should we do? Shut it down. Shut down the whole nation. The Financial Times says here the new coronavirus may already have infected far more people in the UK than scientists have previously estimated. Perhaps as much as half the population, according to modeling by researchers at the University of Oxford. So the scientific studies, if you haven't noticed, they're beginning to change. Early on, it spreads, it's contagious, and it's very deadly. It's perhaps 30 or 40 times more lethal than the ordinary flu. So what do? We shut it down. That's just what we're supposed to do. Now we're seeing the death rate plummet. Now we're seeing those percentages plummet. And now you're seeing more and more studies coming out saying that actually it may be that most of us have already gotten this. A mild form of it. A mild case of it. Maybe the authorities in Ohio were onto something. Yesterday, of course, we came to the 400,000 point. It's doubling every 6 days. Well, let's just go with that. If that's the case, why is there just a handful of deaths in Ohio? This study out of Oxford says if the results are confirmed, they imply that fewer than 1 in 1,000 of those infected with COVID-19 become ill enough to need hospital treatment. That's according to Sunutra Gupta. I'm not sure if there's any relation with Sanjay, but he's connected to this too. The professor of theoretical epidemiology who led the study, it says the vast majority develop very mild symptoms or none at all. We need immediately to begin large-scale serological surveys, antibody testing, to assess what stage of the epidemic we are in now. It says the modeling of infectious disease group indicates that COVID-19 reached the UK by mid-January at the latest. Like many emerging infections, it spread invisibly for more than a month before the first transmissions within the UK were officially recorded at the end of February. It says the research presents a very different view of the epidemic to the modeling at Imperial College of London, which has strongly influenced government policy. So the modeling at the Imperial College of London is that basically millions are going to die. Millions and millions and millions of people are going to die. And that's the modeling that the UK government is relying upon. That's the same modeling that a lot of these national governments are relying upon. Highly contagious and very lethal. Millions and millions will die. This is what Peter Hitchens, he's the bad guy this week, because he came out and criticized these draconian measures, these unconstitutional measures put in place right here in the UK. He's asking here, is it all justified? There's a document from a team at Imperial College of London, says Hitchens, which is being used to justify it. It warns of vast numbers of death if the country is not subjected to a medieval curfew. We've got to put in place a medieval-like curfew, or else there's going to be mass deaths, millions and millions of deaths. Hitchens says, but this is all speculation. It claims, in my view, quite wrongly, that the coronavirus has comparable lethality to the Spanish flu of 1918. Well, if we have time, we're going to talk a little bit about the Spanish flu later on in the show. But this is what we were told. This is coming from the experts. What was it that Mr. Trump said? Somehow word got out that this is the thing we're supposed to do. They come into my office. They say, Mr. President, we've got to close up the economy. We've got to shut down America. And of course, if he would have resisted against that, an unbelievable onslaught of criticism would have been coming his way. Just hinting at the fact that he's about to reopen things. Look at the way the media reacted to that yesterday and the day before. They can't understand it. They're screaming. Don't you know 10 people have died in India? This is from Hitchens. It says, what can one say to this? In a pungent letter to the Times last week, a leading vet, Dick Sibley, cast doubt on the brilliance of the Imperial College scientists, saying that his heart sank when he learned that they were advising the government. Calling them a team of doom-mongers, he said their advice on the 2001 foot-and-mouth outbreak led to what I believe to be the unnecessary slaughter of millions of healthy cattle and sheep until they were overruled by then-chief scientific advisor Sir David King. He added, I hope that Boris Johnson, Chris Whitty, and Sir Patrick Vallance show similar wisdom. They must ensure that measures are proportionate, balanced, and practical. Well, so much for that. Total lockdown. This is what we're supposed to do. This is what everyone is supposed to do. Listen again to President Trump explaining what happened in those critical moments when the professionals, when the experts waltzed into the Oval Office and said, we've got to shut it down. Clip one again.
And now a few people walk into the Oval Office, say, sir, we have to close up the country.
And
I said, what are you talking about?
And that, Mr. President.
If I would have not done it, we would have been unbelievably criticized for not doing it. But it's never been done before.
Yep.
Somehow the word got out that this is the thing we're supposed to be doing.
It's never been done before, but now this is what we're supposed to do. It's just what we're supposed to do. There's not too many world leaders. You just saw an example of it yesterday in India, who are willing to stand up against the conventional wisdom. Here it's unprecedented. It's never been done. And now, all of a sudden, just within a matter of days, weeks, a few weeks. And this is what everyone is supposed to do. President Trump continued. Clip two.
And now all of a sudden, you're basically turning off the country. I said, this has never been done before. What are you talking about? But we understand it. You have hot spots. But we've had hot spots before. We've had horrible flus. I mean, think of it. We average 36,000 people death. I'm not talking about cases. I'm talking about death. 36,000 deaths a year. People die 36 from the flu. But we've never closed down the country for the flu. So you say to yourself, what is this all about? Now,
how did you?
It's never been done.
How did you?
That's President Trump yesterday with Fox. Asking there at the last, well, what is this all about? What is going on? What is going on? He says, yes, there's hot spots. Right now, the hot spot in the United States is New York. But it's not like we haven't had hot spots before. What if we had an influenza tracker? Let's say a normal year for the flu in the United States, 50,000 deaths. That's about 1,000 per week. What if we add the tracker that kept track of every single one that was added to the death list, the death rate? What if there was a map of the United States with all of the big red balloons growing to show that this virus was spreading? What if on every nightly newscast we were told about a 48-year-old father who died from the flu because of complications with whatever it was, respiratory or lungs, whatever. This is the only story in the world today. How much is being covered up? How much is going on beneath the surface? Listen, this is from Monday. This is the WHO Director General. This is Dr. Tedros. He's the one that is largely responsible, or certainly he was responsible for throwing fuel on the fire back in early March when he and his organization were saying 3.4%, 4%, maybe 5% death rate on this coronavirus. So he has this panel discussing coronavirus and saying that, hey, the way everyone's responding, this is great. In fact, if anything, we need to ramp it up. And as if on cue, India says, forget about the Wuhan region. We're going to shut down all of India. How about that? Can anyone outdo that? Can anyone take it a step farther than Prime Minister Modi? 1.3 billion people, a few hundred cases of the Wuhan flu, and 10 deaths. A complete and total lockdown. According to BBC, people don't even know when they'll be able to leave their houses to shop for food. So here is Dr. Tedros. The entire discussion revolves around coronavirus, COVID-19. And then right at the end, he tucks in this little tidbit, clip 3.
So I would like to end by reminding everyone that although COVID-19 is dominating the world's attention, there is another respiratory disease that's both preventable and treatable, but which kills 1.5 million people every year. And that disease is the old-timer tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis. I heard his accent there. I had a hard time with it there for a moment. 1.5 million people every year. Now, that's an infectious disease. In other words, you quote-unquote, catch it. It's not as infectious as like the common cold or something like that, but think of the death rate. Or I don't know what the death rate is, but the number of deaths, he just told you, 1.5 million. That's every year. Tuberculosis, that's every year. How do we battle that? I guess we lock it all down. But the truth of it is, nobody cares about tuberculosis. Nobody cares that 1.5 million people die of it. CNN's not going to do a story on that. Nobody's going to have a daily tracker of the amount of people dying from tuberculosis. This is what we're supposed to be worried about. It's all carefully packaged, carefully framed. You're being told what you should panic about. Now look, all of these things, none of it's natural. You read Mr. Armstrong's book, the World Tomorrow book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. There is going to be, we are going to eliminate these infectious diseases. Viruses aren't going to spread. When we get into the second and third and fourth generation of tomorrow's world, sickness and disease will be a thing of the past. I'm just talking to you about the world of today. This is Satan's world. And that's why we have so many different diseases, deadly diseases. But the level of panic. Again, you think of Ephesians 2 and verse 2. The fact that Satan is surcharging the air with so much irrational, emotional outbursts. Where is the logic, the sanity? We're talking about world leaders that are making directions or decisions that influence millions of people. Can we get at least going by the Wuhan standard? Can we at least get a tuberculosis tracker? Can Johns Hopkins University at least put together a website so we can keep track daily of what's happening? We've got to know. If we're going to continue to live in fear, if we're going to continue to worry about every little germ, I would think tuberculosis would be a bigger concern than it is for most. The Wall Street Journal, writing about the coronavirus, it says, if it's true that the novel coronavirus would kill millions without shelter in place, orders, and quarantines, then the extraordinary measures being carried out in cities and states around the country are surely justified. Well, even that, is it? Supposing it's the worst-case scenario, supposing it was 2 million, that's 500,000 more than tuberculosis. What is it that would justify a total shutdown? I don't know the answers. This is not God's world. I'm not a president or a prime minister. But what is it that justifies a complete and total shutdown? They walked into President Trump's office, the experts, and they said, sir, we have to close up the country. Well, what are you talking about? That's never been done before. I know, but we have to close it down. Somehow the word got out that this is the thing we're supposed to be doing. And now we're beginning to learn more about this disease. It says here, but there's little evidence to confirm that premise, and projections of the death toll could plausibly be orders of magnitude too high. It says fear of COVID-19 is based on its high estimated case fatality rate. 2-4% of people with confirmed cases have died, according to the World Health Organization and others. So, if 100 million Americans ultimately get the disease, 2 million to 4 million could die. We believe that estimate is deeply flawed. This is an article, by the way, by two professors of medicine at Stanford, and they had assistance from another individual. So three doctors that are calling into question these outrageous statistics that have frightened everyone on Earth. It says, we believe the estimate is deeply flawed, and the true fatality rate is the portion of those infected who die, not the deaths from identified positive cases. So here again, some honest math. If you're going to base it just solely on the number of people who've tested positive, then you're discounting all of the mild cases that never go in for a test. You're discounting them altogether. And then terrifying the general public by playing around with the numbers. We're talking about basic math. And is it important? You bring some of this up, and immediately the doomsayers say, well, you're a denier. You're saying it's not a disease. You're saying the disease is a hoax. What these people are saying is that there's a big difference between an epidemic that kills 10 to 20,000 people and one that kills between 2 and 4 million people. Can we agree on that? Tuberculosis? 1.5 million every year. Influenza, 300,000 to 600,000 every year. Automobile accidents, 3,000 per day. Well, we could go on and on. Is this something that should turn off the economy, that should shut down the world? It's just bringing more curses upon us because, as we've been saying, the cure is much, much worse than the disease. These professors at the Wall Street Journal, they write, next, the Northeastern Italian. So they have several case studies that they bring out to show that these percentages, these death rates, they were wildly overestimated. And it uses the example of this Italian town of Vo, it says, next, the northeastern Italian town of Vo, near the provincial capital of Padua, It says on March 6th, all 3,300 people of this little town were tested, and 90 were tested positive. A prevalence, so we're talking now about a prevalence percentage. These are just how many people in that little town got the virus. That's 2.7%. Applying that prevalence to the whole province, which has a population of 955,000, which had 198 reported cases, these are ones that actually got tested, suggests there were actually 26,000 infections at the time. So in other words, just a small, small number go and get tested. These are the ones that are generally the most sick. It's just like President Trump said back at the early part of March when he said, I don't agree with 3.4% because you're not counting all the mild cases. Turns out President Trump, his hunch was closer to the truth than a lot of these scholars and experts. 26,000 infections in one province in Italy. It says that's more than 130-fold the number of actual reported cases. Since Italy's case fatality rate of 8% is estimated using the confirmed cases, the real fatality rate could in fact be closer to 0.06%. So pretty contagious, lots and lots of mild cases, and a few fatalities. That's what we're seeing as it spreads around the world. It goes on and gives a few other examples too. And then it says here, the epidemic started in China sometime in November or December. The first confirmed U.S. cases included a person who traveled from Wuhan on January 15th, and it's likely that the virus entered before that. Tens of thousands of people traveled from Wuhan to the U.S. in December. Existing evidence suggests that the virus is highly transmissible and that the number of infections doubles roughly every 3 days. Well, that's even faster than what the authorities in Ohio said. An epidemic seed on January 1st implies that by March 9th, about 6 million people in the U.S. would have been infected. As of March 23rd, according to the CDC, there were 499 COVID-19 deaths. I think it's up to 750 now. It says here, in the U.S., if our surmise of 6 million cases is accurate, that's a mortality rate of 0.01%, assuming a two-week lag between infection and death. This is one-tenth of the flu mortality rate of 0.1%. So here are these professors of medicine from Stanford who are now saying that the lethality rate, the mortality rate for this, it could actually be lower than the flu. Now, as they say, this does not make COVID-19 a non-issue. The daily reports from Italy and across the U.S. show real struggles and overwhelmed health systems, but 20,000 or 40,000 death epidemic is a far less severe problem than one that kills 2 million. Given the enormous consequences of decisions around COVID-19 response, getting clear data to guide decisions now is critical. It says, finally, if we're right about the limited scale of the epidemic, then measures focused on older populations and hospitals are sensible. In other words, focus in on the elderly and those at hospitals and how that we can target the problem there, because that's where people are most likely to get so sick that they die. It says, finally, a universal quarantine may not be worth the costs it imposes on the economy, community, and individual mental and physical health. Does this epidemic, this pandemic, justify the kinds of actions we've witnessed in recent weeks? Well, President Trump, as I say, it seems like he's given it the 2 weeks. I guess his 15-day period comes up Monday or Tuesday. And he's indicating now that he'd like to reopen the United States for business, if not next week, certainly sometime before what he said was Easter. I guess that's April 12th. But here he is yesterday, again, on Fox News, talking about how that He wants to put Americans back to work. Clip six.
We have to put the country to work. Look, you're going to lose a number of people to the flu, but you're going to lose more people by putting a country into a massive recession or depression. You're going to lose people. You're going to have suicides by the thousands. You're going to have all sorts of things happen. You're going to have instability. You can't just come in and say, let's close up the United States of America, the biggest, the most successful country in the world by far.
And the radical left pounced on that statement because he said, if you shut down the economy, you're going to have thousands of deaths in other areas, like with suicides. You're going to have thousands of suicides. And they say, who is he to take numbers? Who is he to make an estimate to try to scare people? Can you imagine? After all that we've heard over the last month, they've been out there saying this is going to be like the Spanish flu. And President Trump comes along and says, look, the cure is going to end up killing people. And he's right. He is absolutely right. But they're the only ones allowed to play with the numbers, you see. They're the only ones allowed to give you an estimate. There's a website, by the way, COVID Act Now. And they had all these, you can go and look at it. It has an image of the United States. You can click on every single state and you can get the estimate. This is how many people are going to get sick in, let's say, Nebraska. And this is how many people, by this date, this is how many people are going to be hospitalized. And by this date, this is how many people will die. And as Sean Davis was tweeting out yesterday, every single case, just a wild overestimate. But they've got this little disclaimer at the top of their website that says, this model is intended to help make fast decisions, not predict the future. Look, we're not predicting the actual number of cases or deaths here. We're trying to help authorities make fast decisions. And did they ever make fast decisions? This, we're now told, is just what we're supposed to do. You get 10 deaths in India, you shut down the nation. Shut it down. And where are the authorities, the leaders, with the courage to stand up to it? And to say, look, this is nonsense. This is madness. President Trump went on to say this yesterday, clip four.
He said, look, we lose thousands. I brought some numbers here. We lose thousands and thousands of people a year to the flu. We don't turn the country off. I mean, every year. Now, when I heard the number, you know, we average 37,000 people a year. Can you believe that? And actually, this year, we're having a bad flu season. But we lose thousands of people a year to the flu. We never turned the country off. We lose much more than that to automobile accidents. We didn't call up the automobile company to say, stop making cars. We don't want any cars anymore. We have to get back to work.
They don't want to make that comparison. He's wrong to make that comparison. In fact, Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, he's the authority. And he said to talk about automobile accidents, deaths, car people who die in car accidents, that's a false equivalency. That's really a false equivalency, he said a while back. Don't even bring it up. Don't even bring up the risks associated with driving a car. Can't do it. Thousands and thousands of people dying from the flu every single year. But now with this, we were told, they just walk into the office, they say, Mr. President, we got to shut it down. Why? It's never been done before. We just have to shut it down. Millions are going to die. Millions! And he said, somehow, some way, we were told that this is just what we're supposed to do. And everyone's been doing it. He's finally waking up to the fact that it's destroying the country. It's destroying the economy in many other ways. One final clip from yesterday, clip five.
You can destroy a country this way by closing it down, where it literally goes from being the most prosperous. I mean, we had the best economy in the history of our country. 3 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden, we're supposed to shut it down. And then we're supposed to pay people not to go to work. We never had that.
And so as he gears up for ending the shutdown, he's going to have quite a fight on his hands. He's going to have to go against the media. He's going to have to go against the Democrats. He's going to have to go against these radical governors. And he's been one that's been willing to do that. But they're going to be fighting him every step of the way. And unless he fights back, their goal is to destroy the nation. Their goal is to destroy him. You could say, well, they want to get rid of the disease. Some few, I suppose. Some have just gotten swept along into this. But look at the main players here. You've got the communist Chinese state, like I covered on Saturday. You've got the United Nations. You've got the left-wing media. You've got all these left-wing governors. You look at the most strictures and restrictions put in place. It's in the northeast of the United States and the West Coast. Those are all the areas that vote blue. They vote Democrat every single time. Why is it that way? And then why is it when it gets more strict, like in Oklahoma yesterday, the Republican governor says, hey, we got to shut more down. We've got to put on more restrictions. Then you read a little ways into the article and you see that they're getting a tremendous amount of pressure from Democrats. Democrats who are insisting this is just what we're supposed to do. It doesn't matter what the bottom line says. Doesn't matter how many deaths. Doesn't matter if this is a state that hasn't really been affected by it much. Shut it down. That's what he's going up against. There's a spirit behind it, as we know. And the goal is to blot out the United States. To blot out Israel. 2 Kings 14. Well, that's eventually going to happen. The Psalm 83 Alliance brings that out. We know what's coming, and we know we only have a very short time left, and God's given us, he's given us this temporary resurgence, and even this crisis, though much of it is man-made, he's allowed all of this to jolt us, to get us to look at ourselves, to look at our sins, to turn to God with heart-rending prayer, to turn to God with humility and repentance. We only have any way you look at this disease and the end of this pandemic and whether it dies out completely or it just continues on with this irrational behavior, this is not God's world. It's an upside-down world, and a world explosion is coming. People are exploiting this. People are weaponizing this. And the world is changing dramatically right in front of our eyes. It's not bringing the world together. It's driving us apart. It's making us look out for our own. It's making a state look out for its own. Nations looking out for its own. We're seeing the demise of globalism. The rise of nationalism. And the fulfillment of dozens and dozens of prophecies in your Bible. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program talking a little bit about the history, going back 100 years, a little more than 100 years, the flu epidemic, the Spanish flu of 1918. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
In his autobiography, Herbert Armstrong wrote about how the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918, it actually went into 1919 as well, lasted for a full year. But he writes about how it impacted him. He was living with his family. They had a small infant at the time. They were living in Iowa. He wanted to move back to Chicago so that he could keep his business going. This is following or right near the end of World War I. And he says in his autobiography on page 176, people were dying all over the nation, and especially in the larger cities. In the larger cities where they're cramped together, it makes it easier for disease to spread. It's like what we see in New York right now. He says here, we decided against taking our baby back to the congestion of Chicago. Instead, we rented a house in Indianola, Iowa, 18 miles south of Des Moines, where there were fewer people to come in contact with and less danger of being exposed to the new influenza disease. So he basically quarantined his wife and little baby. This was a flu epidemic, by the way, that was particularly dangerous for children, five and under, and for middle-aged adults. Adults in the prime of their life. Adults with strong immune systems between the ages of 20 to 40. And of course, it was also hard on the elderly as well. But it was a unique pandemic in that it took out people mostly in the prime of their lives. Well, he had his wife and baby stay there for a few months. And he says here, leaving my wife and baby with her sister, I returned alone to Chicago to look after my business. At the railroad depots, boxed caskets were being loaded on the baggage cars of most trains, bodies of influenza victims. We had not wanted to risk exposing our new baby by a train ride to Chicago. In Chicago, I saw people in the congested loop traffic wearing cloth masks over their mouths and noses to prevent breathing a flu germ. He says, though, after some 3 months, we decided the family could not remain apart any longer. So there came a point where he had to carry on. He personally, he was making this decision himself, and they had an infant. So finally he says, look, we've got to live together. This is before, of course, they were in the church. It says, nor could I afford the frequent trips to Iowa to be part time with my family. So I brought my wife and baby daughter back to Chicago. And then he talks about where they lived from that point forward. They all survived the pandemic, but a lot of people did not. The world of 1918 had 1.8 billion people. 1.8 billion people and an estimated 500 million worldwide. That's about one-third, almost one-third of the world population that became infected with the virus, the Spanish flu. And of that 500 million, an estimated 50 million worldwide died because of the pandemic. That's a 10% death rate. This is what many of the pundits, many of the experts were comparing it to back in February and even early March. The coronavirus, I mean. 50 million died worldwide and 675,000 deaths in the United States. According to the History Channel, it says nearly 200,000 Americans died from the Spanish flu in October 1918 alone. 1 month, the month of October 1918, 200,000 Americans die. The CDC website says mortality was high in people younger than 5 years old, 20 to 40 years old, and 65 years and older. The high mortality in healthy people, including those in the 20 to 40 year range, was a unique feature of this pandemic. According to the History Channel, it says the worst horrors were seen in Philadelphia, where the number of deaths approached 1,000 a day at the pandemic's peak. Entire neighborhoods were draped in crepe that was mounted on front doors to mark deaths inside. It says the scenes in Philadelphia appeared to be straight out of the plague-infested Middle Ages. Throughout the day and night, this is one city, the city of Philadelphia. It says throughout the day and night, horse-drawn wagons kept a constant parade through the streets of Philadelphia as priests joined the police in collecting corpses draped in sackcloths and blood-stained sheets that were left on porches and sidewalks. The bodies were piled on top of each other in the wagons with limbs protruding from underneath the sheets. The Forbes publication from a couple years ago, speaking about, again, the high infection rate, some one-third of the people on the planet, 10% of them dying. It says, because of peculiarities in the way the so-called Spanish flu virus mutated, it tended to kill people with the strongest immune systems rather than the weakest, meaning those in the prime of life. It was especially virulent in striking down members of the military whose mobilization for participation in the European war greatly facilitated the disease's spread. It says the Spanish flu killed more U.S. warfighters than would be lost in the Vietnam War. This is the greatest plague or pestilence, epidemic from the 20th century. Italy, to take another example, you've seen a lot about Italy in the news today. It has a population of 60 million today. Back in 1918, it had a population of about half that, 35 million people. Italy lost 450,000 people to the Spanish flu. Now, as far as a shutdown, there were a lot of businesses that shut down, but it was more because their employees were either dead or sick. This from History Extra, I thought this was a really powerful point to make. And it has to do with how they responded here in the UK. It swept across all of Europe, the whole world, the UK, the United States. And it says here, many key ways in which the disease was spread were not addressed. Schools in London only closed if staff absenteeism made it impossible to keep them open. Secondary schools remained open throughout, as did churches, on the grounds that during a crisis, people should turn to religion, not be excluded from it. Well, there's a novel idea. Maybe in a time of crisis, we should turn to God. Maybe in a time of crisis, we should turn to churches. It says it was a case of business as usual in Britain's factories too. Those in the black country relaxed their no smoking rules, believing that cigarette smoke would prevent infection. Well, so they didn't know as much as we know today. We're so much smarter today, aren't we? It says public parades and pageants were also allowed to go ahead. Armistice celebrations on 11th of November meant tens of thousands taking to the streets. And so I'm sure it wasn't life as usual, but it certainly wasn't a complete and total lockdown. There's another article from BBC that talks about how that coming out of this pandemic, coming out of this curse, this disease, this is what gave rise to so many nationalized health systems. The pandemic transformed public health here in Europe, here in the UK, so that we would be ready, so that we would be prepared for when another epidemic breaks out. And well, here we are 100 years on, and there's an epidemic, there's a pandemic. It's not even close to what it was 100 years ago. And yet these nationalized health systems, which are practically worshipped, are already overburdened with bodies. You think we really are, in all of our modern advancements, you think we're really prepared for what's coming, for what your Bible prophesies? It's definitely something to think about. Don't forget about our special Saturday edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. My father will be speaking live on this program, so tell your friends about it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email the program, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.